Good morning. Today's daf in Gittin Lamed Vav. We're on Lamed Hey Amud Beis. We're going to be starting with the words Yibayilahu, short Amud. We are a third of the way from the bottom. We are in the first of many Tekanos that we're going to be discussing here in the fourth Perek. So we talked about Tekanos since the beginning of the Perek. Perek started back on daf Lamed Beis. We talked about various Tekanos that were instituted regarding Gittin. And so now we're involved in a Tekana regarding the wife's ability to collect her ksuva. She becomes widow, she becomes divorced, she's entitled to a ksuva. Ksuva is your prenuptial agreement that allows a woman to collect money post-marriage, either after death or divorce, death of the husband, of course. So it allows her to collect money, and so now we're just going over the detail of her ability to collect while she's an almana. Okay, I already pointed this out yesterday. It's so interesting. The Torah says, make sure that we take care of almanas, right? The widow is obviously in a precarious position, and so there is a responsibility that the community has to take care of her. And so this became a bit of a tricky discussion that we had yesterday, and that is now her ability to collect ksuva. Now, obviously, that's financial protection for her. That's a big deal. But yet there are problems. What's the problem? The problem is that the only way she could collect ksuva is only by making a shvua, right? Anytime any creditor comes after any of the yesomim to collect any kind of debt, so you have to make a shvua. I explained this yesterday. We went over this in detail yesterday, and the aman is included. The Gemara entertained for a moment yesterday. She might be different. There might be a chain issue involved, but nevertheless, the halacha couldn't be any clearer, and that is that in order for her to collect, she has to make a shvua. That we know. Now that we know she has to make a shvua, So the problem is that they don't allow her to make a shvua. We explained yesterday why it is that we don't allow her to make a shvua. So now that's a tough position, meaning she wants to collect her ksuva and she's an almana, but she has to make a shvua, but they won't let her make a shvua. That's a very tough position. So Rabbi Gamliel was misakein, she'll make a neder. So even though the shvua avenue is cut off, but nevertheless she'll make a neder. Good. So that's what we discussed yesterday, and that brought us to a couple of details regarding making a neder. Meaning, it's a solution, but it has its limitations. We again, talked about this yesterday. She's a widow, and she gets remarried. Okay, and she hasn't yet collected her ksuva. Okay, so now, would it be possible for her to go back to her, to the estate of her former husband, of her late husband, and now go ahead and demand ksuva? She's entitled. And at the same time, however, they're going to have her make a neder. Wait a second. If she makes a neder, she's currently married. Her husband will be able to be made for the neder under those circumstances. So the making of a neder over here will not help because the neder has no teeth because the husband could just simply be made for it. So we have to take that into consideration. We talked about that at the end of yesterday's daf. What about hataras nedarim? Meaning if the avenue in which she can go ahead and collect her ksuva is via neder, so why aren't we worried that she goes to a chacham and she'll say to the chacham, she's not even remarried. Stam, she's an almana. Why doesn't she go to a chacham and tell her neder over to the chacham, where the chacham now will be matir neder? Isn't that a concern? So the Gemara says maybe that's a concern.
Why would she do that?
Why would she do that? She doesn't want to be bound by her neder.
If she wants to collect her money.
Good. So she'll make the neder to collect her money, and then afterwards she'll be matir neder.
After.
Yeah. Perfect. It's a great plan. So so are we worried about that? So that is, the Gemara says it could be a concern. Really, it's going to be dependent on the following. When you go to a chacham to be matir neder, do you have to be mefarid as a neder? Do you have to specify and explain exactly what the neder was? And, excuse me, oddly enough, that's a machlokas. And in terms of whether or not you need to be mefarid as a neder. And that's where we're picking it up right now. Everything we said was obviously background. And set up, and let's continue where we left off yesterday.
That she didn't collect it. What kind of a neder she made?
The neder she made is that if I benefited at all from the ksuva, if I've got any form of prepayment to the ksuva, all the fruit of the world should be ushered to me.
Okay, but obviously she didn't. She wouldn't mind.
That's the purpose of the neder. But then afterwards, what she could do now is that she can go to a chacham, if she's now currently married. Well, remember, the neder has to be made in order for the husband to be made for the neder had to have been made after she got remarried. Okay, fine. So if she made the neder before she got remarried, that's fine. Then we're not worried about a new husband. But if she can go to a chacham, she can go to a chacham anytime she wants in order for the chacham to be matir neder. Okay, good. All right. So So now we're picking it up in the Gemara where we left off yesterday. Lamin Hamad Beis, a third of the way from the bottom. So is there a requirement to specify the Neder to the Chacham? So Rav Nachman Einot Tzarech, Rav Papa Amar Tzarech, it's a machlokas amongst the Amorayim. Gemara explains, Rav Nachman Amar Einot Tzarech. So Rav Nachman takes a position which, quite frankly, is going to be a little bit challenging for me to explain. You're going to a Chacham, you made a Neder, and you're now trying to release yourself from that Neder. The Chacham now is going to listen to you. And according to Rav Nachman, but don't give him all the details. Einot Tzarech Lefarit Es HaNeder. It sounds strange, right? So di amar tzarech zimin de guys lady dibura v'chachamai deshama mefer, and the problem is as follows according to Rav Nachman. Look, you are now in a position where you are going to have to explain. Okay, some people are articulate, some people are not, and over here you're going to a chacham. It's a little bit intimidating, and now you're going to try to explain what the neder was. You're not going to get it all out. You're going to stop somewhere halfway through your sentence, right? Guys lady dibura, your words are going to get cut off. And the Chacham now is going to have an extraordinarily limited understanding of what the Neder is, and he's going to be mater the Neder based on what he heard. But you didn't present him the full story. And it could very well be that there are important details that you left out. So therefore, Rav Nachman will tell you, and I know this is interesting, Rav Nachman will tell you that it's better to say nothing than to give a half a story. Now, I'm at a loss to explain, according to Rav Nachman, if you provide the Chacham nothing, so then how can he be Mata the Neder? On what basis is he going to be Mata the Neder? Okay, so I admit I'm struggling a little bit in terms of being able to explain that. But the issue is that once you're put in a position where you need to explain, who's to say you're going to give over the full story? Rav Papa Amar Tzarech Mishom Milsa Di Yisura. And Rav Papa says, no, you have to be Mefartas and Neder, because what you have to do is that there could be occasions where the Neder was made for a really good reason. Let's say you made a neder to incentivize yourself not to violate Isurim, right? Or we did this back in Adarim. And now you're going to a Chacham to be Matir. Why? Because you really want to do the Isur. Chacham needs to know that. So Rav Papa says it's important that you're Mefaret, that you give over the details and the background of what is behind the neder, so that the Chacham now knows, oh, wait one second. I don't want to release him from that neder. The neder is holding him in check and preventing him from violating an Isser, no, let's keep it. Okay, so, when you go to a Chacham to be Matir Neder, do you have to be Mefartas and Neder? We just saw it together, we learned together, it's Rav Machlokas, Rav Nachman, Rav Papa, the Gemara gave Sfaris for both, we continue. Tanan. I know Sein Hashem Ba'Avera. So, Apostle. So, let's say you're a Kohen and you decide that Grusha is for me. Okay, she's a divorcee, you're not allowed to marry her. Okay, I know I'm not allowed to marry her, but that woman's speaking to me and he marries her. Now, the Kohen shouldn't have done it. So his next trip to the Beis HaMikdash, so he brings his wife in tow, and the other Kohanim say to him, look, you shouldn't have married her, and you know what? You're going to be banned from doing the Avoda. Oh, so fine. So at what point in time now can he resume doing the Avoda? It's so funny, if you would have asked me, I would have told you, and when he divorces his Grusha, so then he will be able to do the Avoda. We're learning together right now. No, it's a Mishnah B'choros. I know Sein Hashem Ba'aveira, Apostle Achidur Nahana. So the Mishnah in Bukhara says that all he has to do is make a neder against his wife. Now, obviously, you know what the neder is going to do. It's going to incentivize him to divorce her. Okay? Because in other words, there are going to be now things in this world that are going to be ushered to him, whatever is included in his neder, until he divorces her. So he's going to be strongly motivated to divorce her. That's enough to allow him to resume doing the Avoda. By the way, what does that tell us? It tells us that really, while he's married to the Grusha, really Me'ikar Adin, he can do the Avoda. In other words, but basically the Chachamim stepped in and said, not while you're married to the Grusha, that's ridiculous. Okay, fine. So once you make a neder, now putting yourself in a position where you're motivated to divorce her, now you're allowed to do the, now you're allowed to do the Avoda. V'tzini Allah, that's the Mishnah. Now on that Mishnah, Yoredu Megareh, Noder V'Oved, Yoredu Megareh. And over here, the Braisa, four succinct ways to describe it, four verbs, and that is that Noder V'Oved. So now you're a Kohen, you're in the Beis HaMikdash, you're married to a Grusha. Okay, so here's the sequence. You'll make a Neder, okay? Now you're motivated to divorce her. You'll do the avoda. You'll come down from doing the avoda, and then you'll divorce her. Now, Iyamar, it's great. So Iyamar, now the Gemara says, now, we learned the Mishnah B'chorus, we learned the Braisa. Now, let me ask you. If you're taking the Rav Nachman position of Ein Sarach Lafaret, that when you go to a Chacham, you don't have to give him any background, you don't have to give him any details. So now, you're a Kohen, you want to do the Avoda, you're married to a Grusha. Oh, what do you want me to do? You want me to make a Neder? No problem. Perfect. I'll make the Neder, I'll do the Avoda, and then later, I'll go to a Chacham, and I'll be and he'll be Mati the Neder. And obviously, the Gemara says that's ridiculous, meaning the whole point of the Neder is to motivate him to divorce his wife. So the Gemara's answer, we're on the top of Lamed Vav, Amid Alf, Demadrina Leber Rabim. You know what we're going to do? We're going to have him make a Neder that is unbreakable. So, Hanich Laman Damar, Neder Shud Barabim, Elo Afara, great. A Neder Barabim, public Neder. So, that is it unmaterable? I made up that word. Okay, good. So Neder Shud Barabim, Elo Afara, Laman Damar, Yesh Lafara, Michael Maymar. But the Gemara points out that that's subject to a machlokas, whether or not a ned barabim is subject to hafara or not subject to hafara. Again, we're using the word hafara loosely over here. Obviously, over here we're talking about hatara, but okay, but hopefully you get the point. Just give me one moment, let me finish the thread, and then I will pause. De madrina le al das rabim. So the Gemara says, well, over here we're not talking about birabim, but al das rabim. The difference is, birabim simply means public, and al das rabim means I'm doing it not based on what I think, but based on what public opinion is. And over here, as far as the public is concerned, what do they want? They want Kohanim, not married to divorcees, to do the avoda. And now I'm making the neder not based on what I think, but based on public opinion. Amar meimar hilchus afilaman damar neder shu debarabim yesh lafara, adas rabim ein lo afara. So, and a meimar says, look, here's a halacha. That a neder berabim, if I make a neder and I make it in public, eligible for hatara. However, if I make it al das rabim, not eligible for hatara. And the Gemara says that's only when it's a dvar reshus. That's only when it's something for the purpose of the neder is optional, volitional. But if it's a dvar mitzvah and I made it al das rabim, so I can be matir. And the reason why is because If the heter nadarim now will allow me to do a mitzvah, one would have to assume that the public would want that as well. And so therefore, if the purpose of release of the neder, even if it's al das rabim, is so that I can do a mitzvah, even al das rabim would be okay.
When could it be barabim and not al das rabim?
No, barabim just simply means you made it in public.
So how could it not be a das rabim?
Because I just simply, in other words, I'm doing it based on my own das, but I'm just doing it in public. Al das rabim is where I say beferish. I'm doing it based on not what I think, but what others think. So it's a difference of nusach.
Cohen married to a divorce, he loses the right to do the avoda.
Perfect.
But when he divorces her, he gets the right back.
Even before he divorces her,
if he
as long as he makes a neder, as long as he makes a neder that he's
lost it. I thought he lost
it
forever.
Yeah. No, he did not. He did not. He gets reinstated.
Okay. So get rid of the dead weight, basically.
Perfect. Perfect.
Okay. What is the gain by being matter than later? He's back to square one. They won't let him do the avoider.
Yes, they will. That's what he just said.
No. Okay, fine. But the point of the Gemara is that once he makes a neder and it's al das rabim, so then it's no longer eligible for afara, and therefore he's back. He'll be back to do the avoda. One quick story that ties a bow on this whole discussion. Ki ahu mikrei dar together, the Gemara points to a particular Rebbe, de adre ravacha al das rabim. Now, this particular Rebbe, they banned him. They banned him from being a Rebbe, and a neder was made that he can no longer teach. De havei pesha b'yanuka, because what he was doing is that he was hitting the children. Okay, right, we all know. In other words, for most of educational history, hitting the children was normal. Okay, and I know. In other words, and I'm gonna whenever I speak to the older generation, they're gonna tell me, I remember my Rebbe hit me. Okay, fine. And now as a modern teacher, meaning I teach in the modern era, so Rebbe hits a kid and that's it. In other words, he won't be a Rebbe any longer. So okay, fine. So and you know, I right. So the but anyway, when the Gemara now is describing this Rebbe's Pasha B'Yanuka, so I'm just giving context over here. So Pasha B'Yanuka, when the Gemara describes it, it means that he hit the kids a lot. In other words, right, there are other Gemaras that describe that discipline comes in the form of verbal and physical as well. Okay, and I'm not here to litigate right, wrong. That's, you know, I'm past that. What however, this particular Rebbe over here was posher. In other words, it was too much. And so meanwhile, so they said, okay, no longer can you become a Rebbe. No longer can you be a Rebbe. And they made a neder. And not only did they make a neder, al das rabin. Okay, now we're locked into this neder, right? And meanwhile, the hadra ravina, the lo ishach the dai kavasei. And Ravina said, you know what? Let's bring him back. What about the neder that was made al das rabin? Again, what we just learned. We're going to plug in what we just learned. Yeah, but over here we're talking about limud haTorah. Limud haTorah obviously is a mitzvah. And so over here, even though it's al das rabim, we couldn't find a better Rebbe. Okay, he's got his issues. And I can only guess they try to talk to him, counsel him a little bit about the amount of times that he hits the kids. However it worked out. However the details worked out. The Gemara's simple point is that since we're talking about a mitzvah, and since we couldn't get a better Rebbe than him, and we're talking about limud haTorah, so therefore, even though it's a neder al das rabim, we're allowed to be matir. That's the point. Okay. Ve'edim chos memal get mim leitikana olam. Okay. Now, we're up to takana number two. Okay, so we just finished a long discussion of takana number one. Takana number one, how can we allow the amana to collect her ksuva? Good. And we have a solution. And then to review, I'm not going to review right now. In other words, that's the last daf and a half of Gemara that we just did in terms of making an avenue, making a path to allow the amana to collect her ksuva. Good. Now we're up to the next takana of the Mishnah. The Mishnah brought us three takanas. This is now takana number two of the Mishnah. And that's going to be have people sign on a get. What? That's right. Having people sign on a get, two Adam signing on the get, that's a takana. That's a takana derabana. Okay, let's go over this again. As I mentioned at the beginning of the Mesechta, the machlokas we need to know and like really, really digest is the machlokas Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Meir in terms of what exactly is kores, what's creating the severance between husband and wife. When he writes the get and hands it to her, so what is creating the severance? It's a machlokas between Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Meir. We've gone over this machlokas numerous times, and again today we need to know this machlokas. And that is the following. According to Rebbe Elazar, so Ede Misire Karte. So the Edom that see you hand over the get from him to her, from husband to wife, that's Kares, that's what's creating severance, that's what's creating the divorce. That means that according to Rebbe Elazar, do I need people to sign on the get? Not at all. In other words, the get is going to be written, then the husband will hand this written get over to his wife. No witnesses need to sign on it. You do need witnesses to see the transfer of the get from him to her. That's Ede Mesira. Ede Mesira Karte. Now, according to Rameh will say, no, that the get needs to be signed. When the Torah says, Vikas of law, you know what that ksiva is going on? It's not talking about the actual text of the get. That's Heksher Mitzvah. What it's talking about is the Edom signing on the bottom of the get. That's what creates the creases between husband and wife. So is it Ede Mesira or Ede Chasime? Now that you know that, now that we all know that, now we go back to our Mishnah. What does our Mishnah say? You know, we're going to have witnesses signing on the get. You know what that is? That's tikkun. That's a takana de rabbanan. How does that work? The Gemara discusses. So ve'edim chos men lagem me'me tikkun olam daraisehi. Dechsev v'chasom b'sefer v'chasom. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. You're telling me that signing a shtar is a takana de rabbanan. It's a daraisa. I have a pasuk. Now, interestingly enough, the pasuk over here is not a pasuk in the Torah. It's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. And over here, the pasuk is describing deeds, titles, properties were sold, and instructions in terms of what to do with the paperwork. Now, the Navi describes v'chasov v'sefer v'chasom. Well, what you're going to do is you're going to write up title on the sale of the properties, and you're going to have it signed. Okay, and the Gemara is assuming right now that even though it's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, but what the pasuk is being megala. Is that the din d'oraisa that you sign the paperwork? Now, another interesting point, by the way, just to take into consideration, the pasuk in Yirmiyahu is not talking about a get. It's not talking about a divorce document. It's talking about other types of documents. And we made this point already numerous times. We get to say it again today. And that is that this machlokas between Rav Elazar and Rav Meir is not limited to Gitei Nashim. The machlokas in terms of whether Eide Mesiri Karte or Eide Chasim Karte is a general, universal debate regarding all documents. It's clear. Meaning our Gemara is using a pasuk in Yirmiyahu describing a sale document, and meanwhile, chasima, you need to sign it. So the Gemara says as follows, Amar Rabba Lotzricha, Le Rabba Lazadam Eide Mesiri Karte. So the Gemara says, okay, so here's what we're going to do. What we're going to say is that our Mishnah is following the Shita of Rabbi Lazar. So according to Rabbi Lazar, you don't need signatures at all. So Takin Rabbanei de Chasim and Meitikana Olam de Zimnin de Maisa Sahade Inami Zimnin de Azle Le Medina Sayam. So the when we have now Eide Chasim according to Rabbi Lazar, you don't need it. There is no need whatsoever, as we already explained. According to Rav Elazar, to have people signing on it. However, sometimes it's helpful. It's convenient, right? Sometimes the Eide Mesira went away, and now what do I need? So I need I need the get to be good. So what we'll do is we'll have the Eide Chasima. It serves as fantastic backup. Great. So in other words, the proper way to understand our Mishnah says that having people signing on the get is a takana. We don't understand because, according to Rav Meir, what do you mean takana? It's a din daraisa. And the Gemara says, no, you'll understand the Mishnah from the lens of Rabbi Elazar, where I don't need signing at all, and the signing on the get is serving as a wonderful backup. That's one approach to understanding our Mishnah. Here we go. The Gemara has a second mahalech. Rav Yosef Amar Afilo Tema LeRav Meir. So another approach in terms of understanding our Mishnah is that really our Mishnah is like Rav Meir. Wait one second. According to Rav Meir, the signing of the document is Min HaTorah. So how did you understand our Mishnah? Well, here's what happened. Min HaTorah, what do I need? All I need are two people to sign on the document. What are they signing on the bottom? You would think, as I would, they're signing their names. Min HaTorah, that's not necessary. Right? This is really interesting. I'm not sure how to properly present this. But according to Rav Meir, the Eide Chasim Ekarta just simply means I need two signatures on the bottom. I just simply need two people to sign on the bottom. What are they signing? Just simply whatever they want. In other words, they're seeing the get. But what are they actually writing? Min HaTorah? It's not important. In fact, before the Takana, they could just simply say, "I write John Doe or John Hancock." You know, it's so funny. Trust me, I spent time with this Gemara. Ani Ploni literally means Ani Ploni.
That's the wording, Ani Ploni?
Yep.
Without a name?
Perfect. Perfect. And watch.
Why the ambiguity?
Because that's all that's required. V'itkinish yu'edim efarshin shmoseyem begitin. Mimnei tikkun olam. And now, what's the takana? The takana is that you actually have to write, you have to sign your name. You have to sign your name. Okay, Ditanya, the Gemara here quotes a brace of Rishona, Hayakosev, Ani Ploni Chasamti Eid. Originally, they just simply wrote generic, super generic. Ani Ploni Chasamti Eid. And then, Im Ksav Yadom Yotzimi Makam Acher, Kasher V'im Lav Pasol. And now, imagine how difficult it's going to be now for notarizing this document. Meaning, wouldn't it have been a lot easier had he actually written his name? Okay, but still, at least we have his handwriting. Okay, so there's a name for those handwriting experts. I forgot it. Doesn't matter. Anyway, you'll get a handwriting expert. There we go. So you get a handwriting expert now to come and to match the handwriting with this person, and that's how you'll be Mekayim the Shtar. Not efficient. Anyway, Amar Rabbi Gamliel, Takana Gadola, Hitkinu, Shiyum Afishim Shmosein Begitin. And Rami Gamliel says, Takana Gedoli Itkinu. They made a big Takana. And that is that when they sign their name, they're going to actually sign their name. Mimei Tikkun Olam, and that's for the purposes of Tikkun Olam. Just by the wording of the Gemara over here, Tosus picks up on this Diuk. Just on the wording of the Gemara, what does it sound like? Definitely get the sense that Rami Gamliel himself was not Misakin. Meaning, the Lashon of the Gemara is Takana Gedola Hitkinu. They made a big Takana. Well, Didn't we get it from our Mishnah that Rabbi Gamliel made the takana? Okay. So that's a little bit of, that needs a little bit of work. Tosis makes his point. Anyway, but the point is, I could learn the Mishnah like Rav Meir. According to Rav Meir, signing is midaraisa. That's true, but you don't have to sign your actual name. You just have to write on the bottom. And along came Rabbi Gamliel or some based in shortly prior, and they said, you know what you need to do? You need to not only sign, but you need to sign your name. So if you see Manalo, the Gemara says, okay, now let's talk about signatures. Okay, most of the time, in my history of working with signatures, I never can read a signature. In other words, if you have somebody signing on any document, I'm describing my own signature as well, it's a scribble. And meanwhile, we all know legally that's a signature. And we're going to learn it in today's daf. Obviously, man Allah, the Gemara says, Vaha Rav Tzari Kavra. When Rav signed, so what he would do, he would make a picture of a fish. His signature looked like a fish. And Rabbi Chanina Tzari Charusa, Rabbi Chanina signature looked like a palm tree. And Rav Chista Samach, Rav Chista would just make a circle. There's my signature. And Rav Oshia Ayin. Rav Oshia would have the Ayin. And the letter Ayin. And Rabba Bar Rav Huna Tzir Makuta. And Rabba Bar Rav Huna made a picture of a mast of a ship. And so what do you have over here? They have to write your names. You don't even have to write your name. A signature could be anything that clearly represents you, and people know that that's you and your signature. So Shani Rabban and Debikin Simanayo. So the Gemara says, okay, I hear you, but these are Talmid Chachamim, and they at the time were super popular. And Mikara Bemayafkeina Bediske. And the Gemara says, and how did they become so popular? Because of all the correspondence. People would be writing to the Amoraim all the time. They'd be sending back letters. Rashi writes over here, Shilas Vachuvas. Rashi says even just regular correspondence. Because they were sending out so many documents and everybody knew what their signature was. Everyone knew. You saw on the bottom of the document, right? The picture of a fish. Oh, of course, that's Rav. Okay. In other words, if you lived in Rav's generation, everybody would know that. Therefore, the picture of the fish would represent Rav's actual signature. Meaning, and this doesn't pose a problem to our discussion whatsoever. Our Gemara said that originally, even according to Rav Meir, you didn't even have to have them write their name. They could just simply write on the bottom, Ani plonis chasamti eid. That's it. And then the takana is sign your name. That's a takana, sign your name. What about the Amoraim who made fish, palm trees, right? Samechs, ayins. That's their name. Meaning because
that was their signature.
That was their signature. That was their signature. That was their name. Exactly.
Even with the cuts of meat, they used to cut it like
a right, pie, right. Or correct, correct, right, correct. Yeah. Okay, let's continue. Hello, Hiskin, Prosbol. Okay, now we're up to Takana number 3 of our Mishnah, and here's the big discussion for today. Okay, and that is that the Takana's Prosbol. Okay, we all know the background. We all have the basic idea, and that when you lend money, so the Torah says that you get to the Shemitah year and you get to the end of the Shemitah year, and what happens is that loan's going to be canceled. So that $1,000 that I lent out, so all the borrower has to do is just simply wait for Shemitah to come and go, and at that point in time, the lover doesn't have to pay. That is an interesting way to operate loans. That there's going to be a built-in time limit to every single loan, and every single loan is going to get canceled. And obviously, if we operate with that system, who's going to lend money? In other words, knowing that the Torah is going to go ahead and cancel the loan. Now, the Torah is sensitive to this, and the Torah writes, and I'm paraphrasing over here, I don't have the psukim in front of me right now, and the Torah says, don't worry, meaning that Hashem is going to make sure that the system is going to work. Okay, and do not have alligator arms, right? Where you're unable to reach into your pocket to lend out money. The Torah says, "Lend money and have emuna, have bitachon." Again, that's me paraphrasing the psukim in the Torah. Okay, but as we all know, we all have this thing called human nature, and human nature is that despite the fact that we're given assurances and over here assurances, divine assurances, but nevertheless, it's really hard. It's really hard. I'm going to go lend money, and I'm not going to get paid back. What? And it could be serious money. So, what Hillel and his Beis Din did is that Hillel said, you know what? What we're going to have to do is that we're going to have to overwrite. We're going to have to legislate. We're going to have to allow lenders an avenue, a path in which they can go ahead and collect their loan. It's called Prosbol. Prizbal is going to be a document that is going to be an instrument allowing people to go ahead and to collect their loans, even though the Torah forgave it. Okay. It's a big deal. I'm sure we all know. So where did we learn about Prizbal? So you're going to learn about Prizbal here, meaning today's daf and tomorrow's daf. Those are the two dafim dedicated to the topic of Prizbal. And also you're going to know about it because of the Mishnayos and Shviyos, right? The Mishnayos and Shviyos, you go to the 10th parak. I think I'm right. You go to the 10th parak of Shviyos and over there. So, and we're going to be quoting those Mishnayos a lot in the course of these next couple of days, today and tomorrow. Let's get underway. And just one other historical note, and this is important also for understanding our daf. So Hillel is one of the Zugos. And when I say one of the Zugos, you know, it basically, in other words, with Bayit Sheni, it starts with Anshe Knesset Gedola, and then you go through five Zugos. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos, the opening Mishnayos, go over each one of the five Zugos, and we're up to Zug number five. And that is Hillel and Shammai. Hillel and Shammai are Zug number five, and then after Hillel and Shammai, so then the system of leadership no longer is Zugos, but basically then we go to what you and I would describe as Tanai, right? Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai, et cetera, et cetera. And now that takes us well into Bayit Sheni, meaning Bayit Sheni lasted for 420 years. Even though I say that confidently, it's open to controversy how long Bayit Sheni lasted. But for our purposes right now, we're going to go with the Jewish Mesorah. We're going to go with our Mesorah. Second Temple lasted for 420 years. Of those 420 years, so more than half of it was taken up by Anshe Knesset HaGedola, Shimon HaTzadik, and the five Zugos. So we're now well into Bayit Sheni, but we're in Bayit Sheni. And now Hillel instituted Prizbal during Bayit Sheni. So this is a much older takana than what we've been describing. We've been describing up until now Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel is at the end of Bayit Sheni. But now we're by Hillel. This is during Bayit Sheni. Okay, so just a little bit of historical context. Let's now begin with the Gemara. Hillel Hiskim Prizbal Tanan Asam. So we're learning now. Yes, it's the 10th parak of Shviyas. This is the first mission of the 10th parak. So Prizbal Ainu Mashami. So what Prizbal is going to do is that it's not going to forgive the loan. It'll make the loan unforgivable, meaning that you'll be able to collect your loan. So simple description where Hillel's looking around and basically no one's lending because everyone's worried that they're not going to get paid back. And you're going against the Torah. And here, the Mishnah is quoting some of the Pasuk that I made reference to earlier, which is, don't worry and lend. So, Amar Veskin Prizbal. And so what Hillel did is that he instituted Prizbal. Vizehu Gufo Shal Prizbal. And now, what is the actual text of the Prizbal? Mosrani lechem ploni ufloni dayanim shebemakom ploni shekol chov sheish li eitzel ploni shegbena kol zman she'eretz devai dayanim chos min lamata o ha'edim. And now basically the text of the Prizbal is that what I'm doing now is that I'm handing over my contract to you, the Beis Din. You're going to be entrusted. You're going to be holding my shtar. And so that will allow me to collect at any point in time. Okay. Now it's fair to ask me, and I'm going to really hold the discussion off to tomorrow. Mechanically, how does Prizbal work? What exactly is happening to the loan in that the Torah says that I'm going to go ahead and collect it? I'm sorry. The Torah says the loan's going to be forgiven and I can't collect it. And now because of this paper, of this document, of this paperwork, so now I'm able to collect it. So the mechanics of it, I'm going to discuss in more detail tomorrow. For today, I'm just going to be focused on, obviously, what the Gemara is focused on. And the Gemara now is going to be asking a really sharp question. And so the Gemara over here asks the question. And that is, what does the Torah say? Loan's forgiven. And Hillel can go ahead now and override? How does that work? If the Torah says to the borrower, you don't have to pay, how can the Chachamim now step in and say, no borrower, you do have to pay? All because of a little bit of paperwork that's done? How does that work? Amar Rabbi B'Shvius B'Zman Ezev Rebihi. Okay, so we're going to have two approaches to the Gemara. I'm presenting the Gemara today, Aliba de Rashi. And so what I'm going to do, you'll see when I do this exactly, is that we're going to have over here together two different approaches to this question. Approach number one is Abaye. And Abaye will tell you that Shvi'is Bismanazah is the Rabbanan. And it's not a Din D'Oraisa. And so therefore, the fact that forgiveness occurs Bisman Hazeh, to begin with, to start with, is only a Din D'Rabbanan. And since it's only a Din D'Rabbanan, so now the Chachamim can go in and override. Now you have to wonder, and you don't have to wonder, by the way, because Rashi says it. Shvi'is Bisman Hazeh is the Rabbanan. When did Hillel live? During Bayesheni. So what Abai's approach is that Shemitah during Bayesheni is a Din D'Rabbanan. But Rashi says, but that's right. Meaning, and we'll see, I'm not going to read the Rashi inside, but I'll point you in the right direction and I'll explain a little bit better. So D'Tanya, so first let's go through the Gemara. The Gemara over here goes on to explain. Rebbe Omer v'zeh Dvar Shemitah Shemot. Shtei Shemitah Zakaz Medaber Ech Shemitah Karka Ve'ech Shemitah Ksafim. Now what the Torah does is it links Shemitah's Karka, Shemitah's Ksafim. Two things occur in the Shemitah year. Number one, you leave the land alone. Number two, leave your borrowers alone. Okay, so and one of them is a mitzvah tluya baretz, and the other one has nothing to do with agriculture and has to do with finance and lending. And meanwhile, the Torah connects the two, links the two. Bizman sha'ata mishamet karka, and so now by linking the two, so when there's a shmita and karka, so ata mishamet ksafim. Bizman she'ata mishamet karka, iata mishamet ksafim. So now the two are linked. So that means that when one applies, the other doesn't. When one does not apply, the other does not apply. And we're going to have to now, well, let's just finish reading the Gemara, and then we'll go back and we'll fill in a missing gap. And v'takin rabbanan t'tishamei zech l'shvi'is. And now what the Chachamim said is that, look, even though Shemitah bizman hazeh doesn't apply, but what the Chachamim wanted is that they wanted to perpetuate the financial Shemitah so that we do not forget about it. So, and Rahil o'shenunu amel havazeh zeh, but in this rabbinic institution of wanting to perpetuate Shemitah and have loans forgiven, but that meant that people wouldn't lend. And so Hillel saw this, and Hillel said, it's in principle. So what he did is he instituted principle. Okay, a lot to unpackage over here. I'll do this quickly. Okay, first and foremost, Shemitah Bizman Bayesheni is not min haTorah, so it's clear from our Gemara that our Gemara is taking that position. Well, how can that be? Meaning we have a base of Mikdash. How can Shemitah be not min haTorah? So Rashi writes over here. Rashi is on the Amud Aleph, right? I'm not going to read it inside, but I strongly encourage you to go through it inside. Rashi writes over here that there is another connection, and that's Shemitah and Yovel. Yovel did not apply during Bayesheni. Now, Yovel applies only when the majority of the Jewish people are living in Eretz Yisrael. By Bayesheni, that wasn't the case. Only a sampling of the Jewish people lived in Eretz Yisrael. And so therefore, Yovel did not apply. Since Yovel did not apply, Shemitah did not apply as well. And that's even during Bayesheni. That's Rashi's position over here. Rashi himself acknowledges the linkage that I just linked of Yovel and Shemitah. Not everyone subscribes to that. But in order to explain our Gemara and Abai's approach, you have to say that. Fine. That's number one. Number two. So that means to say that during Bayesheni, there was not a Shemitah min haTorah. But what the Chachamim wanted is people to remember there's a concept of Shemitah. There is an institution of Shemitah, so therefore midrabanan, they then reinstated Shemitah so that loans would be forgiven. Hillel saw that people weren't lending, and so therefore he instituted Prisbal.
But Shemitah's karka also wasn't?
Unclear. From the Gemara, it's not clear. Right? And I was medayik the same way you were. Meaning in the Gemara, it sounds like the only thing they were misakein was Shemitah Ksafim. I'm with you. I'm not sure. Then, I'm just simply pointing out why in Hillel's now attempt to fix the situation, meaning what was broken? No one was lending. Why were no one lending? Because lenders couldn't collect, even though Shemitah didn't apply, but the Chachamim instituted a rabbinic Shemitah. So why didn't Hillel just do the following? Rabbinic Shemitah just simply means that they perpetuated Shemitah. Min haTorah, it doesn't exist. Again, because of its linkage to Yovel, Yovel doesn't apply, Shemitah doesn't apply. And when Shemitah doesn't apply, that's both on the agricultural Shemitah and the financial Shemitah. And so, but what they then did is that they instituted a rabbinic version of it. Okay. And then people weren't lending. So why didn't Hillel just simply do the following? This rabbinic Shemitah is not working. Why didn't he just simply uproot the rabbinic Shemitah? Meaning, what his way of solving for the problem is by overriding the rabbinic shemitah by legislating, instituting this thing called prizbul. Why not just simply get rid of the rabbinic shemitah? So it's a simple question, but the answer presumably is because he didn't want to undermine what the rabbis wanted. What the rabbis wanted to do is that the rabbis wanted people to remember Shemitah, meaning that if they didn't institute some rabbinic Shemitah, so then Shemitah would be lost and forgotten forever. Okay? So what Hillel wanted to do was, on one hand, solve for the lending problem, but on the other hand, not uproot Shemitah altogether. And so he wanted to keep rabbinic Shemitah in some form, but at the same time solve for the lending issue. And that's why he didn't just simply uproot Shemitah midrabanan. He kept it there, but then for lending, he instituted a prizbul to override it. Umi ikamidi, we're back now in the Gemara. So umi ikamidi de medarais al masham teshvis v'takin rabban teshame. So the Gemara says, okay, wait 1 second. Let me see if I got this straight. So now during Bayis Sheni, there's no Shemitah. Again, there's no Yovo, there's no Shemitah. Ah, okay. And now and that means that what? Minat Torah? Lenders can go ahead and collect. And now the Gemara is just simply bothered by, and what did the rabbis do pre-Hillel? They instituted rabbinic Shemitah, and they basically told the lenders, no, sorry, you can't collect. Wait 1 second. Minat Torah Shemitah doesn't apply. That means that the Torah allows me to collect, and you, the Chachamim, are telling me I can't collect? Who gave you that power? Umi gamida de medarais la masham teshvis v'tekin rabban teshame. I'm Rabbi Sheval Tasehu. So Abaye says, nah, the Chachamim could do that. Why? Sheval Tase. Meaning that even though if you're a borrower of money and you owe money, there is a mitzvah to pay back your loan. You have a mitzvah of the Torah to pay back your loan. Okay, that part's true. But what the Chachamim can do is they can override. A mitzvah of the Torah? Yes, if it's Sheval Tase. If it's done via passivity, so then the Chachamim do have the power or authorized to go ahead and to override a mitzvah in the Torah. We all know this, right? This coming year, right? I looked at the calendar recently. So what's happening? What's happening is the first day of Rosh Hashanah falls down on Shabbos. Okay? You know what we're not going to do? We're not going to blow shofar. Right. There's a mitzvah in the Torah to blow shofar. And meanwhile, we're not going to do it. Why?
Isn't it Friday and Shabbos?
Shabbos
Sunday?
Yeah. I'm describing the first day of Rosh Hashanah. Okay, good. We're on the same page. We're looking at the same calendar. So why are we going to blow shofar? Gzeirah d'Rabbanan, not going to go through. Why? But Gzeirah d'Rabbanan. Really? They could do that? They could tell us not to blow the shofar? The blowing the shofar is a mitzvah d'Araisa. And we all know, Sheval Taseh. Yes. They have an ability to override the Torah through passivity. Now, why that is, how that is, that obviously needs more explanation, but those are the facts. Okay. Pause. This is now all explanation number one. Again, to the question of how does prizbul work? So what we're given so far today, and I'm not really discussing the mechanics of legally what's prizbul doing to the loan. What I'm discussing is just the more fundamental issue of, wait 1 second. Prizbul can go ahead and override Shemitah. How can that be? How the Chachamim have the power to do so? So we start off this morning with Abaye's approach, and Abaye's approach is Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is the Rabbanan. Since it starts off on a Rabbanan level, along comes the Chachamim, and they can tinker. They can institute prizbul. That's Abaye's approach. Now, the way Rashi presents it, Rava now is addressing the same question. Rava's not going on the last line that we just did together, but Rava's going back to the original question of, well, how can the Chachamim institute prizbul to override Shemitah? Rava Amar, Hefker based in Hefker, Dama Rabbi Yitzchak Minan Shefker based in Hefker, Shnemar. Avachol Shalom Yavolu Shosh Yamim Ke'atsas HaSarim Vazikenim Yacharam Korukhushov Vehu Yibadel Mikala Gola. Rabbi Lazar Omer Mehacha, Eila HaNachlos Asher, Nachalu Elazar Akom Yeshua Benun Verashe Avos, Vichim Ayin Roshim Eitzel Avos, Lamelchama Avos Manchilim Es Beneim, Kom Mashiyirtu Afrashim, and then we're given the answer of Rava, and Rava will tell you the following. Shemitah nowadays is not a Durabanan. We can go back and say Shemitah Bezman Hazeh is a Daraisa. Right? Again, I'm presenting the Gemara like Rashi. Shemitah Bezman Hazeh is Daraisa. And we don't have to now come on to the Shita of Rebbe that nowadays Shemitah is only Midarabana. No. We could say that Shemitah Bezman is as Daraisa. And still, you know what the Chachamim can do? So they have executive power over money. This is the principle of Hefker based in Hefker. The Gemara says, and I read it really quickly. The Gemara has not one, but two different sources of Hefker based in Hefker. One was from Ezra. And say for Ezra, what happened was is that they went back to Eretz Yisrael, and Ezra was bothered by a simple problem that has now been going on for nothing short than 2,500 years, and that's intermarriage, right? The people that came back with Ezra, so on one hand, right, Zionistic, on the other hand, they had non-Jewish wives. So Ezra told them that, yeah, meet me in my office, right? So he then put out a proclamation that everyone has to go and visit him. And visit him, meaning, right, it's not the kind of visitation people wanted. And they all knew that basically he's going to tell them, right, he can't be with the non-Jewish wives, right? So they obviously needed encouragement. So he said, sure, no problem at all. You want encouragement? You're going to come here within 3 days. And if you don't, so then I'm going to assume ownership of all your properties. He could do that. And the answer is yes. That's called Hefker based in Hefker. Okay. That is, now I'm not saying it perfectly accurately because he doesn't say I'm going to take ownership of it. It's Yecharam called Rechusho, which means that you will not be the owner of your property. Okay. So he can disavow people of their properties. Okay. That's one source. And the other source that I also read too quickly was at the end of Sefer Yehoshua, where basically, land was allocated to various people. Now, how can you do that? That's taking property and assigning ownership to that property. And just like the parent can go ahead and do that via Yerusha, so to the Rushim, the heads of the Jewish people, they also have that executive power where they can take property and assign ownership to it. That also is predicated on Hefker based in Hefker. So in other words, according to Rava, Shemitah Bezmanazeh could be Daraisa. Could be Daraisa. And yet, how does Prisbal work? How can Prisbal now go ahead and legislate that money, which the Torah says the borrower doesn't have to pay? So what the Chachamim can now do is say to the borrower, yeah, you do. But the Torah says, I don't. Yeah, but we have the power of Hefker based in Hefker, and we say that you do. Okay. We're going to pause over here.
So in that case, Hefker based in Hefker, who does the money belong to?
Min HaTorah, the money belongs to the Lover.
Who?
The Lover. The money belongs to the Lover. Shemitah Bezman is Ez Daraisa, which means that the Lover does not have to pay. Min HaTorah. Money's his.
So what do you mean Hefker?
And what Bezin now, and now what Bezin can do is that via Prisbal, they can now say, Lover, you're going to give that money over to the Malva.
So that's Hefker.
That's.
Give it back?
All right, so the Lashon of Hefker, right. So the Lashon of Hefker basically means you're not the owner. Right, we're doing two steps over here. It's a good point. We're doing two steps over here. Number one, Hefker. Number two, we're redirecting who now is going to be the owner. You're right. Doesn't fit in with the lashon of Hefker based in Hefker. I agree, but clearly over here, according to Rava, that's what's happening. Okay, good. Okay, we're gonna pause over here. Okay, and tomorrow a lot of halachas regarding Prisbal. No. Okay. Where are we right now? So we just did daf lamed hey. We covered three takanas today. Number one, the takana of an almana going in and collecting her ksuva. We finished that discussion. Number two, Adam signing on a get, which is the second takana. Is that going according to Reb Elazar or going to Reb Meir? The Gemara had two approaches of how to understand that. And finally, takana number three is the takana of Prisbal. And today we were given an introduction to this takana's Prisbal.